Good morning and welcome to The Caring Generation, navigating life's transitions with dignity, clarity, and stability. I'm Pamela Wilson, the Care Navigator, spokesperson, and guardian of The Caring Generation. If you're joining us for the first time, The Caring Generation focuses on the conversation of caring, giving us permission to talk about aging, the challenges of caregiving, and everything in between. Share our website, thecaringgeneration.com, where you can listen to all of our past programs, give your opinion on our caring controversy of the week, and download our weekly top 10 tip sheets. Please invite your family, friends, and loved ones to join us every Sunday from 10 to noon. In this hour, we'll be talking about the sea of aging, cardiac and heart health. Dr. Mark Wallach joins us to share information from his book, Back to Life After a Heart Crisis, and his personal experience with bypass surgery, how it affected his life and his family relationships. Dr. Francisco Arabia is board certified by the American Board of Surgery and the American Board of Thoracic Surgery and has 19 years experience providing cardiac care and surgery to patients of all ages. He earned a bachelor's in biomedical engineering at Tulane University, a medical degree from the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, and an MBA from the University of Arizona. He's practiced at multiple medical centers in the United States and received extensive additional training in cardiac device and artificial heart implantation. Dr. Arabia joined the Mayo Clinic in 2005 as chair of the Division of Cardiovascular and Thoracic Surgery, and he's Mayo's lead heart transplant surgeon in Arizona. Good morning, Dr. Arabia. How are you?
Good morning. Doing very well. Thank you.
You are welcome. May 21st of this past year, there was a story I saw on the CBS Evening News about 43-year-old Charles Okeke, who went home for the first time. Can you share the story of his previous 2 years living in a hospital?
Sure. Actually, Charles initially came out in 2008. He already had a heart transplant that had been performed in California about. He had moved to Arizona, and he was doing fairly well, and 2008 started getting very sick. He we found out that he was rejecting his heart. He went ahead and got very, very ill. He ended up in intensive care unit, very sick, trying to die. And then we reevaluated him for another heart transplant. We put him on the waiting list. However, we were running out of time. He was getting very, very ill. He only had a day or 2 days of life, so we went ahead and put a total artificial heart as a bridge to transplant in 2008. What that meant was we removed his transplanted heart, and we put this total artificial heart in. He then he did very well with it. He recovered, was up and walking around, having a fairly normal life within the hospital, as long as I can be, but he could not leave the hospital because the driver, the machine that drives the total artificial heart, weighed 400 pounds, and he could not leave the hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
And so he lived in the hospital for about a year and 9 months. His family came in, his kids came in. He would go down to the cafeteria, but he could never leave the hospital. And in April of last year, the FDA gave approval for a portable driver, which was the first one in the U.S. for a total artificial heart. We were able to remove the big driver, the 400-pound driver, and connect him to the portable driver. That was very easy. That was just unplugging some lines outside him. And in a few days later, he was able to go home, and he was the first patient with a total artificial heart in the U.S. to go home.
Wow, and I noticed it looks like a backpack.
It looks like a backpack, weighs about 12 pounds. It has an air compressor. It has batteries. They can be recharged at home. They can be recharged in the car, actually. They connect to the cigarette lighter.
Wow.
And he was able to go to movies, go out to a restaurant, go out to the kids' schools, and be more involved in life. Of course, never being the same. But the good thing is that we always thought that we were never able to go into transplant him again because he had too many antibodies, meaning he had a component in his blood that will attack whatever organ we found. And fortunately, 3 weeks ago, we found a perfect donor.
Huh?
And we were able to transplant him, and he had a heart and kidney transplant done 3 weeks ago yesterday, and he's home. He went home a couple of days ago without a heart and a kidney, no total artificial heart. So everyone is very, very delighted. It's almost a miracle.
It sounds like it. How many people wait for, you know, real hearts, and then how many people get artificial hearts kind of like he did because one wasn't available and he kept waiting?
Well, there are approximately about 4,000 or 5,000 people waiting for hearts in the U.S. at one time. About 2,000 get transplanted a year. Of those, a very small percentage, maybe about 1% of those, actually end up with a total artificial heart. The total artificial heart is used in an extreme condition that the patient is not going to survive, and both ventricles, both main chambers of the heart are failing. There are other devices that are utilized that are called left ventricular assist device that help the left ventricle, and those of the patients who are being transplanted right now in the country, between 30 and 40% of the patients that are being transplanted have some type of device, as what is called a bridge to transplant, either as a left ventricular assist device or total artificial heart.
Wow. You make this sound so easy. How many of these do you do in a year?
Well, last year, just to give you an idea, we did about 60 devices and only about 22 transplants. So we are finding ourselves doing more and more devices than transplants. And part of the reason is because there are not enough hearts for everyone. Mm-hmm. So we have to be very selective when we give a heart to someone. And because there's more people with heart disease than there are donors, that would probably be the trend nationwide, that there would be more devices placed on a permanent basis versus devices being used as a bridge to transplant.
What's required medically and personally for somebody that gets a transplant? What kinds of special things do they have to do to make sure that this works?
Well, we have to make sure that the heart is the main organ that is failing, that everything else is okay. Although you can do heart-kidney transplant, heart-lung transplant, or heart-liver transplant, but you prefer the patient not to have any other organ that is failing because that increases the complexity of the care. So you want to make sure that the patient, that everything else is working except the heart, if possible, that they have social support, meaning that they have a family and someone who can help them take care, someone who can kind of keep an eye on them at home, make sure that they take the medication, make sure that if they get sick, they seek help. We also want to make sure that they understand the significance of what is being done. And probably very important, too, is that they are willing to follow the medical instructions that are being given to them. And by that, I mean that they're compliant with medications, that if we tell them you need to take this drug and that other one, that they actually do that. Because in transplantation, if the patient decides not to take a medication, that could be a lethal event.
And does insurance pay for this?
Yes, they do pay.
Wow, that's amazing. Is there any place that listeners can go to find more information? Is there information on your website or on the Mayo website?
Yes, actually, you can go. There are multiple manufacturers of devices, and you can search them in the web, mechanical circulatory devices, or ventricular assist devices, or heart pumps, and it'll give you a list of all the manufacturers, and then you can go to their specific website and find information about them. You can also go to the Mayo website and search for heart pumps, and you can get some information there too.
Great.
So it is in the web. You can find a significant number of information with the different manufacturers. Now, although there are several pumps, not all the pumps serve the patients in the same way. So one thing that we have learned with time is that you have to tailor the needs of the patient, or you have to tailor the pump to the needs of the patient.
That makes
not
sense.
Every pump is for the same group of patients. You have to select the pump for the specific condition that the patient has.
Wonderful. Dr. Arabia, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
I'm Pamela Wilson, the Care Navigator. You're with me on The Caring Generation, navigating life's transitions with dignity, clarity, and stability. Our program's not limited by time zone or location. Your out-of-town friends, family members, and loved ones can listen each week by visiting khow.com and clicking on the Listen Live button. Up next, Dr. Mark Wallach, a physician, shares his story about having quadruple bypass surgery.